Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
If you're easily offended, this may not be the show for you.
Whatever happened to the men being able to physically retaliate against the women in WWE? This is a fantasy environment.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Sunday, May 26, 2019. And keeping with the tradition of having co-hosts on this show, I have a new co-host tonight. And his name is Dave Allen. He's from New England, longtime wrestling fan. Actually just got back into wrestling after taking a 17-year hiatus. So he attended Money in the Bank in person, which was his very first WWE live event. So really cool in-person perspective on the Bayley win, AJ Styles and Seth Rollins, Shane McMahon and The Miz's steel cage match. And we try to put a positive spin on a lot of different stuff. I know there's a ton of podcasts and audio out there, sometimes even admittedly myself, that does not give WWE the benefit of the doubt. However, we make a concerted effort to give a positive spin to the show, to the current product, which we discuss as well. We discuss how he got into wrestling, as I ask all my co-hosts, what keeps him into wrestling, his favorite memories, and try to end in a positive note talking about Stone Cold. And we discuss the Owen Hart tragedy that occurred 20 years ago this week. So lots of content coming your way. And before we do that, though, thank you guys for joining me. This show is growing pretty darn quickly, and I want to thank you for that. We recently got ranked 129th on the ranking system for Apple Podcasts in the sports and recreation category last week, and that fluctuates, of course, day to day. It fluctuates even minute to minute. But it did peak around 129, and yeah, you may say, "Oh, wow, that's cool." Well, you know how many podcasts are out there for sports and recreation? Quite a few. So I think of it as a pretty damn cool thing, and I'm not bragging. I just want to, because this is not me who's doing this. This is you guys who are listening to the show, who are supporting the show and rating the show, who I want to thank. So you guys are the best. Seriously, thank you. And this show is going to continue to grow. And one small announcement before we get rolling is the WWE Podcast website is in renovations. I know I mentioned that last time, but it's continuing to improve, and it's under a complete overhaul from the 1995 look that it has right now. I promise you it is going to get a much more modern look, and the functionality is going to be great. It's going to be clean. It's going to be easy to use. It's going to be updated for 2019 and beyond. So just keep an eye out for that. If you go to my website now, you're going to say, huh? Well, it's not done yet, okay? So you're going to get the old version if you go there now, and much outdated content. I'm talking like from 2 years ago content. So don't judge it yet. The new site is coming in a couple of weeks, and so look out for that. But in the meantime, just follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast for all the updates and wrestling conversation as well. And by the way, one last thing before we get to the interview, or conversation rather, with my co-host, is AE's Double or Nothing. Let me just put it out there. I did not watch it because I didn't want to shell out the cash, I'll be honest with you. However, I did see highlights. I saw the Twitter reaction. Everything I'm hearing and seeing was positive for the most part. People are loving it. The symbolic destruction of Triple H's throne that Cody Rhodes used as a sledgehammer to destroy was pretty cool. The introduction of Jon Moxley, aka Dean Ambrose, into the scene to take out Chris Jericho with Dirty Deeds, pretty cool as well. Hearing JR's voice back, awesome. I think this company has a hell of a future ahead of it. I understand it's only one event, but sometimes you just feel it. And with this company, I'm feeling right now. And they need to continue that momentum into the TNT weekly presentation of their show, and not just the pay-per-views, obviously. But it's got off to a start that couldn't have been any better. So that's a really cool thing. And I'm excited for it. Yeah, this is the WWE Podcast. I understand that. But at the same time, I'm a wrestling fan through and through. And I hope that all the success in the world comes to AEW. So let's get to the interview with my co-host, Dave Allen. Okay, welcome back, everybody. And right now, I've got a co-host with me. His name is Dave Allen, and he is a New Englander, fellow New Englander, although I'm from New York, so I guess I'm kind of the redheaded stepchild of New England. And he is a longtime wrestling fan, took a break for a while, but then recently came back to the game, and I want to get into all of that. He went to Money in the Bank, and I definitely want to cover his in-person experience from his first ever WWE attended live event. And to close the show, we're going to cover Owen Hart because this is the 20-year anniversary, not to date, but this week is the 20-year anniversary of the Owen Hart accident. So we're going to cover all of that, the good, the bad, and the in-between. So I'd like to introduce Dave Allen. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to be here. If people would like to, they can follow me on Twitter. That would be at Dave Allen Actor. That's also the same on Instagram. I'm work as an independent freelance actor out here in New England. I bounce all over the place, and I'm also a diehard sports fan. So wrestling is perfect for me because it's a mixture of the entertainment and the sports. So
that is true. And so I'm going to guess you're a Red Sox Patriots fan.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, don't forget the Bruins and Celtics. Yeah, that's true. Yep. I don't know if that makes me a heel to you being a New Yorker or not, but
yeah, no, that instantly turns you heel. You've turned heel within 3 minutes of being on the show, so that's awesome. No, that's totally fine. I don't know if I've ever had interviewed a Red Sox Patriots, like everything that a New Yorker is on the other side of the fence of. So this should be a fun conversation. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So Dave, like before I hit that record button, we were talking off the air and you mentioned that you had recently just come back to wrestling, and we'll get to that and exactly what brought you back, but you were gone for almost 17 years. And before that, you know, you were a loyal fan and just as me, you're only a year older than I am. You were into the Attitude Era. And even prior to that, and you know, when you would watch Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Ultimate Warrior, George the Animal Steel, all these guys. So how did you become a fan of wrestling, WWF and WWE?
Well, it's really crazy, not to date myself too much, but the age that I grew up in, we had very limited channels and very limited choices. It wasn't like today. And my family was always watching it. And so I was there too. We had the one TV in the house that the whole family had to sit around. I'm sure like we had to go outside and move an antenna to get the channel to come in. Like it was like that. But wrestling was something that we were always into. Our neighbors were always into. So I just got into it with my family as a young child.
That's pretty cool. I mean, I'll be honest, like usually I hear a lot of solo stories of people having to kind of be fans on their own or find that one or two friends at school that secretly like wrestling, and you had to like hide that you liked it at times because you get flack for being a wrestling fan, which is, you know, just kind of goes with the territory. But that's really cool. So it kind of became like a family event for you.
Yeah, it really was. It really was as a young child, and we were very close with the family down the street from us, and so they were into it too. So for most of my life, it seemed normal. It seemed like the normal thing, just like for us watching a Red Sox game. And it wasn't until later when I started to get away from it that I started to realize, you know, it wasn't the cool thing. It wasn't the normal thing for whatever reason. Of course, now as a mature adult, I think it's cool, and I don't really care if the next guy doesn't think it's cool, you know. So, and that's really why I'm here on the show. I want to try and push it and try and sell it and try and let people know that it is something to be excited about. It is cool. It is fun and entertaining, and there's a lot of great reasons to stick with it. So
there is. And you brought up a really good point, because when you're in that innocence age of watching wrestling, and as you said, you felt like it was a normal thing to watch. And as you get older, you realize, oh, it's not so cool to wear an Austin 316 t-shirt out there anymore. You become kind of conscious and aware of other people's opinions. And when you're at that age, the other people's opinions they matter more than they probably should. But as you just mentioned, now that we're grown adults, it's kind of like, who cares? Like, I love this. I don't care if you do. And I'm going to wear a wrestling t-shirt if I want to wear a wrestling t-shirt. And I like the fact that you're trying to put a positive spin on something that at times desperately needs it.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't, not to take us too off track or anything, but when I got back into it, I was trying to catch up. And so I started listening to podcasts, listening to yours, of course, and I heard a lot of negativity, like a lot of people complaining just about the McMahons or just about the direction that it's going or all these negative things. And I'm thinking to myself, but you're still fans, you're still watching. So why do you have to focus on the bad things? Like, that's like me as a Patriots fan getting bummed out when the Eagles beat us two Super Bowls ago. It's like, wait a minute, our team is still in the Super Bowl. So, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, and the thing is, I think people are often gravitate towards the negative because it's easy to jump on the bandwagon. Twitter can be at times, not all the time, but it can be a cesspool. I mean, sometimes it brings out the worst in people. Everybody's got a voice. So everything that WWE does, they'll never, ever have everyone on board with everything they're doing. It's just not going to be the case. This platform of social media didn't exist back in the Attitude Era that we all look back on in just its glory. Like, oh my God, those were the best days of wrestling. But if you had social media back then, you can bet your bottom dollar that there would have been a large number of people that didn't like the direction or thought this was stupid, that was stupid. Unfortunately, I think it's kind of a reflection of society at times. And look, I'm of no innocence here. Like, there are times when I have to catch myself, like, this is something that I love and I absolutely love and I always want to see improve. So to me, that's my justification, is not just to complain and bitch and moan, but to want to improve the product that we all know and love.
That's true. That's a good point. I mean, there are things that can be improved, but I just want to make sure that we don't forget that it's still great.
No, it is. Absolutely, it is. So let's talk about that great product that we all love. And what are some of your – I got to ask this because I'm always curious about when I bring co-hosts on what their favorite memories are. If you have, I'm not going to make you single out one because it's probably impossible. But when you look back over your years of watching WWE – what are some of your favorite memories?
Well, my favorite, and this might sound silly, my favorite match, it's not even really like it was the greatest match, but it was when he was called Hollywood Hulk Hogan at the time, came in and went against The Rock. And to me, that was just such a fantastic moment because it was my childhood favorite facing my current favorite at the time. It's like two legends in different eras in the ring together. And do you remember how the match went? I mean, it wasn't Hogan's greatest or whatever, but they were back and forth for a while. And of course, The Rock wins and he shakes his hand. And it just, like, the whole feeling behind that was just joy, you know, from beginning to end. So that's probably my favorite match. As far as moments, if I have to say what's one of my top favorite moments, and I can still watch the clip of it, would be the time that the Big Show broke the ring. Like, that just shocked the world when it happened. People didn't know if it was staged or if it happened accidentally. You remember that I'm talking about, right?
Yep.
yeah.
With Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. It was hilarious to think that people just didn't have a clue if it happened or by accident or if it was supposed to happen. Of course, it's happened since, but it was never the same as the first time, you know?
It wasn't, and they, like you said, they tried again and again. I believe with Mark Henry one time, as well as I think it was Braun Strowman. They also tried it again too, and it just didn't feel right because you knew it was kind of a work and not a shoot.
Right.
The first time it happened, like you said, like, people were going nuts, and you look back on it, like, you see people's genuine shock. Like, is everybody okay? You know?
Yeah.
It was amazing. Yeah, I mean, it genuinely. I remember watching it on SmackDown. Like, oh my God. And Taz said, you know, holy, you know what? And it just felt so real. And those are the moments that keep us coming back. You just, you know, the moments that just you don't see coming. And, like, as you mentioned with Hulk Hogan and The Rock at WrestleMania 18, I believe it was, you had them going face to face. Rock was playing the babyface. Hogan was playing the heel. Obviously, that night in Toronto, the crowd flipped. And JR and the King had to call an audible and just go with what the crowd was reacting to. And they were, it was like 90% behind Hulk Hogan, and The Rock Rock turned heel that night, unknowingly turned heel that night. And since then, he became he went off to do Hollywood, came back, and the people still booed the hell out of him. And yeah, was it a 5-star match? No. But it was, as you just said, it was two living legends inside of the ring. It was those are the moments that just stand still. And you look at them. And I remember them going face to face, and then one would turn one way, one would turn the other, and the crowd was going just absolutely insane. And just to think about something like that now, like where we are now, it's surreal to get those moments.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I try to think of a modern day comparison, like who could do that today that would be the same as that? I can't come up with it. I will say it was pretty awesome. And of course, Elias is nowhere near it, but it was pretty awesome when The Undertaker came in a few weeks ago. I think it was on SmackDown and put Elias down. That was great. And that's like as close as you can get to that, where you have a legend who's basically done and somebody that's new. But of course, Elias is nowhere near The Rock's level, but still.
Yeah, I mean, Elias, like you just said, it's not even close. It's not even a sentence that you should speak the same name, the same sentence as Undertaker and Elias. However, it is about the future, and Elias getting the rub from The Undertaker coming out, even if it was to just give him a tombstone and a chokeslam, fine. You know, and the fact that Undertaker is even still active at this point in his career is, yeah, he may not be the same guy he was, but it's absolutely amazing that he can even do what he can still do. And the fact that he's going to face Goldberg in a couple of weeks in Saudi Arabia at the Super Showdown is also mind-numbing in terms of this is happening.
I know. That's why I was a little trying to watch the wordage that I was using when I was describing The Undertaker at this point, because that is still happening. And I'm not sure. Do we want to be excited about it because of who it is more so than what can they actually do? And I think that that's why we're going to get excited about it. These are two of our favorites, but they're just, it probably isn't going to look the same.
No, I think this is, you just kind of pointed it out, is this is more of a on paper excitement rather than in execution. I think in execution, we all need to take our expectations and pull them down about 3 pegs. I mean, it's just the fact of Mother Nature against these guys. Goldberg, I think, is a little more, at least in terms of physically able to do things, I think, than Undertaker. But these guys can't escape Father Time, and I think that we all need to just take this down 3 pegs from where you thought it could have been about 17 years ago when the invasion happened with WCW.
I know. And actually, talking about being at Money in the Bank, of course, on the screen, they advertise this event that's coming up, and you could hear the moans and groans throughout the audience, and they were saying, oh, this is 17 years too late or 25 years too late, whatever. They said several years. They would have liked to have seen it way before now. So the fans are a little squeamish about it, too. But still, to me, the guy who likes to look at the bright side and always be positive, it's still two of like my favorites that are going to be there. So you can still get excited about it.
Yeah, you can. And like you just said, I think we need to just understand what it is and just respect the fact that WWE is at least giving us this match, even if it's not going to be what it could have been back in 2001, 2002, and just understand that it's an attraction. It's not necessarily supposed to be a 5-star match. It's huge name, household name versus household name. The top guy from WWE and the top guy from WCW at the time are going head to head. And just for what it is, we just need to understand that it's probably going to be 10 minutes or less, very slow paced power move. And that's just the pace that it's going to be, because it has to be with these guys and how old they are. So before we get to Money in the Bank, and I definitely want to touch on that, and you already did. What brought you back to wrestling? You said you were gone for about 17 years and you popped in for WrestleMania time. So what brought you back to WWE?
So what really brought me back actually is listening to one of my favorite shows on Boston Sports Radio. The producer there actually has his own wrestling podcast as well. And the guys on that channel were all talking about wrestling constantly and all these modern superstars and everything. And so I just, you know, wanted to feel like I was a part of the show that I listened to every day. So I started tuning back in. And this is the real key right here, is I have a 10-year-old son who doesn't know any of the history, has no past, likes or dislikes about it. So I turned it on with him as well, and just seeing his excitement for it and how amazing it was to him and the freshness and newness with him. And it's something that he and I share together now and watch regularly. And I almost can appreciate it vicariously through his eyes and his joy as he's watching it. Of course, he chooses his favorite characters, and yeah, I guess this isn't taking us too far off track. He fell in love with Ronda Rousey, and when Becky Lynch beat her at WrestleMania, he now hates Becky Lynch no matter what and can't understand why she's my favorite. So we almost are at war with each other because my favorite female superstar beat his favorite female superstar, and that's a permanent grudge for him. He can never root for her because of WrestleMania.
I was just, that's not taking it too far off track, because I was just about to ask who his favorite wrestlers are. And if he said Ronda Rousey, I mean, he must be very depressed that she is no longer on WWE TV, at least in the short term. We all know she's probably starting a family and eventually coming back. But, so Ronda Rousey's favorite out of the entire show loses to your favorite and then just disappears off the face of the earth. So with that in mind, who is his replacement favorite right now?
Female?
Or any, either.
I don't know for male. I would like to say Ricochet, but Ricochet never wins, unfortunately. So it'll be easier if he starts to come up the way that I believe we all want him to, because I think that he's a very, very exciting character. But as far as female, it happens to be Bayley, because she was teamed up with Sasha Banks from Boston and then disappeared. Sasha Banks, of course, I'm referring to, disappeared. And so Bayley was the one that he kind of got behind, which, getting back to Money in the Bank, so much for saving the best for last. But that was the best moment of the entire show that night, at least live it was, being there in person.
Well, I'm jealous that you were there in person, because number one, I did not, and that was not my pick. I've been watching wrestling straight with no breaks for 20, 21 years now, and I have, I honestly, I did not see that coming. Usually I can gauge a little bit of where WWE's headed, and where WWE had positioned Bayley over the last year, year and a half, gave us no indication for what they were going to do with her at Money in the Bank. So even if it is saving the best for last or whatever, let's just jump into it, because this is a good place to start. With Bayley winning the Money in the Bank ladder match for the women and then cashing in that night and winning against Charlotte Flair, I didn't see it coming. Clearly, based on the reaction of the audience from at home anyway, they didn't see it coming. And it's a great way to rejuvenate her career that was really on the fringe of the abyss. So give me your in-person perspective, and maybe the audience around you. How did everyone react? What was the coolest part of that?
So I don't know who everybody's favorite was for that ladder match. I couldn't really gauge that throughout the audience, but I was excited for Bayley. I mean, honestly, Becky being my favorite, she's not in the ladder match. She's already Becky Two Belt, so why does she have to participate? So I was like, yeah, I'll get behind Bayley. Nikki Cross is pretty cool. She's exciting. She's crazy in person during her intro. When you watch her come out and grab the ropes and I don't even know what you want to call it, have a mini seizure or headbang or whatever she's doing, she looks like a psycho. So she's fun to root for. But then as a Becky Lynch fan, there's all these blonde Barbie dollish looking types, that are very similar to each other. So it's hard to really pick out one of them specifically. So you want somebody that's new, you want somebody that's different. I'm speaking for myself, of course. And so, yeah, I was behind Bayley. So we see Sonya carrying Mandy up the ladder, and I'm kind of like, this is cool, I mean, that's really, really cool. And that's a lot of weight. That's a hard thing to do. I don't believe, I've never met you in person, but I don't believe you or I can do that. I mean, climbing a ladder is hard enough, carrying, 10 pounds, let alone a human being on your shoulder. So that's cool and everything. But I'm thinking, oh, man, is this really, really going to be it? Is she going to get the briefcase like that? And then we see Bayley climb back into the ring and go up. And I was like, oh, man, this is it. This is it. People started to get really, really excited for her as she's going up the ladder. And then there's this dramatic moment where she stares her down, throws them off. And then I think everybody realizes she's going to take it, because you think about all the ladder matches. How many times do you see somebody up there and then something happens and they don't end up getting it? Even actually earlier that night, I can't remember who it was swinging, holding the briefcase and swinging a little bit, and before she lost it. So we realized at that moment, nobody was coming up to stop Bayley. She was taking it. So fast forward to Becky Lynch's match. Now, I heard you a couple weeks ago on the podcast talking to somebody about who is the modern day fan favorite, like who is the one that just makes the crowd go nuts. That night, all the superstars were there, and it's Becky. Without a doubt, at least that night, Becky Two Belts was the chant. People just cheered like crazy, sang along her song. Like, the place erupted for her. Like, she was, without a doubt, the favorite. Well, Charlotte Flair comes in, and immediately after she beats Lacey Evans, Charlotte comes in, and so now it's looking like, oh, this isn't fair. She's worn out from the first match. She's got to have to do the second one right now. Like, you could almost feel she's going to lose the second belt right now to Charlotte. And of course, the fans have a hard time rooting against Charlotte because it's Ric Flair's daughter. So they're all doing the woo as she's backhanding her and everything throughout the match. Well, she wins, and all of a sudden you hear people yelling for Bayley, yelling for Bayley. There's a small chant, "We want Bayley," and Bayley comes out and the people go nuts. And even I was going nuts. Like, I went from a moment of devastation. Becky just lost one of her belts. All these people wearing their Becky Two Belt shirts. What are they going to do with them now? You know? And so I go from that moment of, wow, this is really depressing. My favorite just lost, to, this is awesome. Here's Bayley to come and save the day and win and take the belt from Charlotte, who held it for, I don't know, a minute tops. And then after that, and I don't know, I didn't see this on the pay-per-view. I haven't rewatched the entire pay-per-view yet, so I don't know how long the camera stayed with her, but she like ran through the audience celebrating, and people were just cheering and chanting Bayley. It seemed like for a very long time, and it was just an awesome moment. And everything after that moment throughout the night was a couple of levels below that as far as excitement and pure joy. But that alone, Bayley doing that, cashing in and winning the belt right there, it seemed like there was not a single person in the entire place that wasn't happy for her and happy that that happened.
It's so awesome to hear, you know, an in-person perspective from sitting at home. I mean, at home, you can get a sense of what the crowd is like, and you can get a sense of what the in-person perspective may be. But until you speak with somebody and they draw that picture for you, you don't really feel it. So I know exactly that feeling, and that I'll tell you, those moments like that do not happen very often. And the fact that you were able to get that in your very first WWE Live experience is something special. You know, clearly, even the seasoned fans, the smart marks, everybody who thinks they know wrestling clearly had no idea of what WWE had planned that night. And that was, yeah, Charlotte's going to beat Becky, and we're all going to be very sad. As you just said, we'll all have to do something with our Becky Two Belt shirts. I don't know what they're going to do now. And now you have Charlotte, the villain, the ultra villain of the women's division, take that from Becky, and Bayley comes out to cash in that very night. I was concerned after when she cashed it in, she wasn't going to be able to beat Charlotte. There's some moments I'm like, uh-oh, is this going to be a foiled cash in? And she was able to do it, and the crowd went crazy. I'm sitting at home like, wow, Bayley went from basically zero to hero in that one fell swoop. And I think Bayley has been a character that WWE fans have been trying to get behind. And I think that the booking and creative have done her really no favors over the last year and a half. And this was, you talk about a rejuvenation of a career. They need to capitalize on this with Bayley and not just let the bloom fall off the rose. They need to continue this momentum and not just allow it to just peter out. So that's an awesome story. And it's one of those things that you get lost in the moment, and these are the moments that bring you back to why you're a wrestling fan.
That's exactly right. You hit it perfectly on the head. The other thing, when the ladder match was happening, I mean, there were times that you could root for her and you thought, okay, she has a chance, and then something insane would happen. Like, I remember partway through it actually turning to my son and saying, well, Bayley's not going to get it, because it looked like she was done. You know, it looked like it just didn't seem in the ladder match that she would be the one to take it, until you saw her make that climb towards the end there. And it was like, wow, it was this like this holy crap moment. She's actually going to win this thing. It was shock factor. It was just everything that makes you want to be a fan.
Now, once she won it, I know you said that the crowd started to chant for Bayley, but that was after Becky lost her second belt. So before that happened and everyone kind of got on board that, hey, that'd be awesome if Bayley was going to cash in right now. After Bayley won the Money in the Bank briefcase in the first in her first match, did you have any idea, or did it happen in the back of your mind, like, hey, WWE, would it be possible for WWE to have Bayley cash in tonight? Did that even cross your mind?
Well, it's funny that you asked that, because I was sitting next to this guy, and he was talking about, oh, I've been a wrestling fan for 29 years. Like, he was the opposite of me. Like, he never went away. I can picture that this guy maybe watches every single thing that's ever shown. Like, he's talking about, he's on his way to NXT TakeOver. He was talking about all these things. He's talking about this $750 championship belt that he has as a collector's item. Like, this guy was the most hardcore fan. And he said to me, it would be amazing if she cashes in tonight. And I thought for a minute and I said, you know what? If Becky loses the SmackDown belt to Charlotte, then Bayley could cash it in because she's on SmackDown now. I actually said that to him. Of course, I didn't want it to happen, and I wasn't hoping it would happen, because what I wanted to see happen was Becky win both matches. But as soon as she lost, like, the fans, the entire crowd immediately went to, we want Bayley to cash this in now. So I don't know how many people were calling it immediately, or at that moment were calling it, or just hoping for it, or if the fans actually believed that it was their begging for it and cheering that made it happen. You know, was it planned beforehand, or did they follow the crowd's wants to try and make us all happy? Like, I don't really know what the truth is, but I don't even know if I answered the question, actually. But
No, you did. So you actually had the foresight to say that to the guy next to you. And this is a guy that, you know, you said, like, that was a guy of 29 years, and he's seen, apparently probably seen and done it all. So you had quite the range of fans around you. So from a really cool moment to a moment that, at least in my observation from home, was not so popular with the audience, and that was Brock Lesnar winning the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. How was it in person? Were there mostly boos? Was anybody cheering? Were people just screaming? Because, I mean, I didn't see Brock Lesnar coming out at the end. I don't think anybody saw that coming either. So WWE was able to pull the wool over our eyes twice. So what was the in-person perspective from Brock Lesnar winning?
Well, in person, from my own point of view, I was devastated to see that Sami Zayn wasn't going to be there. I'll bring it back around, but I do want to just jump down a little rabbit trail about Sami Zayn. Like, I love the guy. I think he's great. I think he's entertaining. I think he's funny. I would be the person that if he came out on stage with the microphone and started insulting me and my city, like, I would be clapping and laughing, because I think the guy's hilarious, and he's not totally wrong. What people say is that he's the voice box for the McMahons and that they're hating on the fans because we complain too much. And what I say is possibly it's Sami Zayn's own feelings about the fans. You know, he's out there basically putting his life on the line. You know, he was out for so long with an injury and he's still to, you know, for what? To appease all of us who are going to complain anyway, you know, so it could be his own thoughts when he's out there. But at the same time, the way that he delivers it is hilarious. And then, of course, his entrance music, even though people might boo the guy, everybody sings along to the entrance music. So I was very excited after the Raw where him, with the help of Baron Corbin and Drew McIntyre, beat Braun Strowman, because I was thinking about last year's ladder match. And it was basically like 7 against 1 or even Royal Rumble. You know, it was everybody against Strowman. Let's all pile up ladders on him last year at the ladder match. And I was like, I don't really want to see that again. And the WWE's done nothing to make it so that it's not basically all against Strowman if he's in this 8-person match. So I was super excited to see Sami Zayn was taking over and I was going to get to see him in person and be a part of the entrance music. So I was devastated already that he was eliminated backstage. And also, the audio quality wasn't that great. So when they showed all the backstage stuff, we couldn't really hear what was going on. So we never actually heard audibly Triple H say that he was going to have to find a replacement. I only know about that from social media afterwards, that that's actually what happened. We didn't know. So we were there waiting for the 8th person to come out and nobody came out. So we're all just kind of looking around at each other like, what's going on? We had no idea that Triple H had even said there is going to be an 8th guy. So we were all just assuming this is just going to be a 7-man ladder match. So, okay, we'll get behind whoever we like the most of the 7 that remain. And Ali was climbing up there. It looked like he's going to have it. And then the music hits. So immediately people are excited. Oh, cool. Here comes that 8th guy, you know? And then we realized who it was. And we all booed like crazy. We all, so much for my idea of trying to keep everything positive. But this was the ultimate downer. Like, this was the last person any of us wanted to see. You could hear the gripes from fans all around us saying he doesn't even need it, which is a fact. You know, he could just walk up to Seth Rollins tomorrow without cashing in and there will be a match for the belt. You know, so why does he even need the briefcase? Let somebody else like Ali, like Ricochet, even Andrade, even Drew McIntyre, let somebody like that get it. You don't need to give it to Brock Lesnar. So even beyond that, as he's on his way up the ladder, people that were in front of us with their folding chairs, which you get to keep as a collector's item, people were taking their folding chairs and leaving. Like, people were so, so upset by it. Like, the boos is just an understatement. Like, there were people that were legitimately angry, felt cheated, felt ripped off, felt like it was a wasted night almost. So, of course, we had other reasons to be excited, but man, that was definitely a rock bottom moment to see Brock Lesnar, of all people, come out and win. And there's guys that do deserve it, that do need it, like Bayley. Like you said, now she has her chance to skyrocket to the top. And, you know, that needed to happen to somebody like Ali, like Ricochet. It didn't need to happen to Brock Lesnar. He's already a main event when he shows up, you know?
It didn't. And, I mean, there's two schools of thought here. I mean, yours is one. And the fact that people were actually angry enough to say, the heck with this, I'm taking my chair and I'm leaving. Like, you could view that as the consumer is telling WWE, I despise the product that you're putting up right now. This makes me sick. I wasted my money. I'm going home. Or you could look at this and say, well, you know, that's what a heel is supposed to do. Like, And people are not used to being angry. They're not used to the emotion of anger with WWE when it comes to storylines in terms of heels. Not because you don't like the storyline, but because a heel gets you angry. WWE likes to make sure that everybody has a smile on their face rather than going home angry. And so, you know, in one sense, I applaud WWE for putting that heat on Brock Lesnar. But, you know, the way you're describing it, it seems to be more of a go-away heat, more of a disgust heat, rather than just like, oh, this heel gets me angry. I want to see someone beat him up, and I want to pay money to see somebody shut him up.
That's true. That's true. But, you know, you could have let Drew McIntyre be that guy. And also, it was the fact that that was the end of the night. You know, the whole night builds to this. This is the main event, and that's the way that the main event is going to end. So I feel like that was part of it, too. They should have maybe altered the schedule. If you're going to let Brock Lesnar do that, have that not be the final thing that we all see. It's like we're all there, and there he is sitting up there on top of the ladder, and then the guy comes over the loudspeaker after a couple of minutes. Like, the rest of us are waiting. Hopefully somebody's going to come out and something more is going to happen right now. Like, this can't be the way that it ends. And then the guy comes up with the loudspeaker, and that's it for Money in the Bank. Thanks for coming. We're like, come on, come on, you know?
That is when, and I've been in that position many a time where you think, like, there's got to be something else. There's got to be something else. And when you hear whoever the ring announcer is thank the fans for coming and the lights come on, you know it's game over. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know there's no recourse from that. Like, that is it. It's like the bar. You're at a bar too late and the lights come on and it's time to go home. Like, you're done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. So, yeah, I mean, I totally understand that feeling. You know, you talk about highs and lows, man. You go from the top to the bottom. But let's bring it back. Let's try to keep this power of positivity, pun intended, to go to the Kofi Kingston match. So, what are your in-person perspectives from that? I know you mentioned that Bayley and Becky Lynch seem to have gotten the loudest positive reactions of the night. What do people think of the Kofi Kingston Kevin Owens match?
See, that was wild, because when I got there, there were a ton of KO shirts. So the audience, I would have thought going in that the audience would be 95% Kofi. It was more like 70-30 as far as the Kevin Owens love. And also at that point in the night, and see, this is another complaint that I hear from people, is that they're letting big events like this be too long, have too many matches. But I also feel like in the case of this night, they put them in the wrong order, because if I'm not mistaken, this match was immediately after AJ Styles, Seth Rollins, right?
Yeah. Let me see if it was. I believe it was. Yeah.
I feel like it was. And so, of course, for no reason at all, Lucha House Party comes out and Lars comes out and kills them all, and you know, that was just randomly thrown in there for absolutely no reason. But yeah, so the Seth Rollins AJ Styles match was like, everybody knew that this was the match of the night. You know, this was the one that everybody wanted to see the most. So I feel like they should have flip-flopped it, because the energy just wasn't as high for Kofi and Kevin Owens as it should have been. But Kevin Owens, like, was yelling at audience members, and he was, like, mimicking the New Day Rock's clap, you know? So, I mean, he was, like, turning people against him. Like, he actually was responsible for getting the crowd energy back up by mocking all of us. And I can't even think of what the word is where you're instigating all of us to root against him more so than really we were all energized and excited to root for Kofi, even though he came out and he threw pancakes at all of us. And, you know, he was Kofi, all the reasons to love him. It was really the way that Kevin Owens turned us against him that then we're like, wait a minute, we're supposed to be really excited for this one. But I just feel like the timing right after the AJ Styles Seth Rollins match, where everybody was just going nuts the entire time, you had the "This is awesome" chant happening as they're circling each other, like before that even started, you know. So that sadly, throughout the night, the Kofi Kingston Kevin Owens match can almost be forgotten, just because of where it was placed. And of course, everybody's focus, I feel like, is going to be on everything that happened with Bayley, the fact that Brock Lesnar showed up unexpectedly out of nowhere and made everybody mad, and of course, the AJ Styles Seth Rollins match, which was well worth the hype. Like, it was as good as expected. It was that was also the second highest moment of the night, was the AJ Styles Seth Rollins match from beginning to end. The whole match was great, and of course, the handshake at the end. So the Kofi Kevin Owens match almost falls away and is forgotten.
That's the danger of when you have such an awesome match as Seth Rollins and AJ Styles. It sucks all the air out of the room, and you don't have a place for the crowd to re-energize and get their life back. And I'm surprised. Usually WWE, in their booking of pay-per-views, strategically places less important matches after semi-main events so that you can build to the main event. And in this case, WWE did not do that. They put them back-to-back, which is very unusual for a pay-per-view. So I feel bad for Kofi and Kevin, as you said, because the crowd was just exhausted from the match before with Seth Rollins and AJ Styles.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The match before just sucked all the life out of us. I mean, in a good way, of course, but still, we needed a little bit of a filler before you bring in another major match like that. Or I'm not certain if they flip-flopped them, would it have been okay? Just because the idea of AJ versus Seth, like these, arguably, and I was hearing from the fans in the place, these are arguably two of the best that there are right now going against each other. So I feel like that could have still gotten the crowd's energy up high if it was right after Kofi Kevin Owens instead of being the other way around.
It very well could have. I mean, there's no question about it. I think that the quality of the match of Seth and AJ was higher than the quality of the match of Kofi and Kevin. That's not to discredit Kofi and Kevin. They did an amazing job as well. But the problem is the bar was set so high with Seth and AJ that when you come down even just a peg, the crowd isn't as emotionally invested. They're a little bit exhausted. As you said, if they flip-flopped it, I think that you probably still would have had AJ Styles and Seth Rollins get a very good reaction, although it may not have been at the level that they saw it at, considering that they just had previously watched Roman Reigns defeat Elias in a match that, I'm sorry, at least from the at-home perspective, no one seemed to care about it. Is that accurate from what you felt in the arena?
It is accurate, and it's also funny because if you wanted to ask who's my son's favorite male wrestler, you just reminded me of Roman Reigns. That's honestly, that was also forgettable that night. He was actually wearing one of the dog pound shirts or whatever it is, big dog shirts. And so he was super excited to see him. Of course, we did see this on the screen that Elias comes and hits him with the guitar and knocks him out or whatever backstage. And he was super excited. There's Roman Reigns. But the fans were booing Roman Reigns. And I don't know what that's all about, if it's a Hartford, Connecticut thing or what, but the fans were booing Roman Reigns, and then Elias comes out, sits down, he has his guitar, he talks his smack or whatever, and, you know, he calls Hartford a toilet, you know, and does his little song, Hartford's a disgrace, you know, and it's his usual thing. And he starts to leave, and I can see my son is bummed out. He's like, oh, man, Roman Reigns isn't going to do anything. Well, he comes out, and I don't even know really how it goes. There's no Superman punch. There's nothing cool really that happens. He just kind of pins the guy. So, yeah, that was what was the word you used? I mean, disappointing?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a little underwhelming. I think that...
Underwhelming, for sure.
Since Roman has come back from his cancer, I mean, he hasn't pulled me in any of the matches that he's had yet. I mean, beyond the fact that, the real man, Joe, that we all feel sympathy for and we're all glad that he's healthy and has beaten cancer, he could have really used that to his advantage, and not in a way that's like stomach churning or in a way that makes him look sleazy, but you could have used that as a springboard to get the people on the side of Roman Reigns, the character. And I think that now the bloom is off the rose with that whole thing, and people are realizing and kind of going back to, okay, so it's kind of the same old Roman Reigns. And we haven't got a really good match from him yet. And you know what? To his credit or his defense, I don't think he's gotten a good dance partner yet. Elias is a guy that is, I think, foundationally sound. I don't think that he has the qualities that Roman Reigns needs to bounce off of inside of the ring. I think that he doesn't possess those intangibles that are needed from a Roman Reigns opponent. And you know, I don't know. Roman Reigns seems disconnected right now from when he's on TV. He just kind of seems like he's going through the motions. Like he doesn't really want to be there. He's just kind of, and I know he's your son's favorite wrestler, but this is just from what I'm getting from at home is like, hey, like he's just kind of like too laid back for me. He's too chill. I need him to give a fiery promo. I need him to use what the crowd was naturally behind him with in this cancer, remission. And he hasn't done that. And so it's kind of like back to, and I know you haven't watched since, you know, you just started watching again in 2019, but it kind of seems like it's back to the same old Roman Reigns.
Yeah, yeah, I get that. I've heard that a lot too. And we did see the episode of Raw when he came back from cancer that night. And of course, they keep showing that backstory. And that really, like you're saying, that really is what could be, should be his story to really get people behind him. And it's like, I don't know, the majority of the people just aren't feeling him right now because there's a lot of nothing happening. And as far as Elias is concerned, no disrespect to him. Like I'm entertained by the guy. And I mean, that's why we watch, right? It's entertainment. And so I'm entertained by the guy, but basically, you know, his act is what it is and should stay that way. As far as I can tell, it's much more fun or enjoyable to watch him come out, sing some silly song about whatever town he's in, putting down the town he's in and how much he hates it and what losers we all are that live there, and then have somebody come in and beat him up. You know, I mean, that's basically all that Elias should be, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, right. Well, right now, that's all he's really shown. I mean, he was doing his guitar bit for months and months and months. And then all of a sudden he comes out there with like no shirt or just a wife beater on and he starts attacking somebody. I'm like, oh yeah, this guy's a wrestler. Like,
right?
Forget. Because he's done this shtick for so long that you're like, oh yeah, he can actually wrestle. And I enjoy his gimmick, but you know, it's kind of like, all right, this guy seems a bit too one-dimensional. Let's give him something else. I don't know, maybe put him in a match or a program that means something and give him a meaningful win. When is the last time Elias had a meaningful win on Raw or on a pay-per-view? I can't tell you. I don't even know, because he is just a guy that is a character, albeit, as you said, very entertaining, and he's got the it factor, but he hasn't had a meaningful win in WWE really since he debuted. And isn't that what it should be about, is wins and losses at times? I mean, that's how you move up. That's how you compete for a championship, is wins and losses. So, yeah, I'm with you on that one. One last question about the Money in the Bank, and then obviously you can add anything that we didn't discuss. Shane McMahon versus The Miz for this in the steel cage. Now, I had a sense that, you know, Shane was actually going to end up escaping this match and ended up winning this match, and I ended up being right. But I think I got the sense in the arena that people felt that The Miz was finally going to get his revenge, and that that everyone was going to be happy with the outcome. And obviously Shane McMahon ends up escaping by the skin of his teeth, and this program is continuing. So what were your thoughts on this match being there?
Well, you're really killing me, because yeah, you're making it hard for me to stay positive. This was another major down moment. The people, for whatever reason, have jumped on board with The Miz, maybe just because Shane McMahon's name is McMahon, or maybe he's also starting to do that that type of character with the whole I'm your boss thing, you know. He's starting to turn that way. So people maybe are jumping on the side of The Miz because they're starting to hate Shane McMahon. Or maybe they're just really sick of this feud and they think if The Miz can finally legitimately win, then it can be over and we can be happy and cheer for The Miz and then go on our merry ways. And it was a letdown. The match itself was a letdown. Like, there was the only good moment in that match was when The Miz was beating him up with the chair and the audience started a one more time, one more time. And this was a time that it feels like the audience really actually did have some control, because he stood there for a minute and he really wound up and gave him one really hard hit and the crowd erupted, you know, and it was like, oh, wow, yeah, he did it for us, you know, whether it's real, whether that's true or not, that's how it felt. And so we're excited. We're thinking, finally, finally, it's going to happen. And he keeps climbing up the cage and he keeps pulling him down, you know. But there was no really like epic moves throughout the fight. There was nothing really that sweet that happened. And in the end, he just kind of goes up there. I guess it's a little bit dramatic because he's hanging on to his shirt or whatever and he falls out of it. But it was just a disappointment. If anything, that's one that they could have just totally left off the card, honestly.
So now when you say that they could have left it off the card, is it because of the quality of the match or the fact that the storyline and the winner of the match was not what the people wanted?
All of the above.
Yeah, okay.
yeah. It just wasn't a good match. It wasn't what the people wanted. And even the finish, like, it was just a lame finish. Like, have Shane McMahon beat The Miz. If Shane McMahon's going to win, then have him beat The Miz in a more dramatic fashion than dropping out of his shirt, you know?
Right. I mean, but that was clearly a way for them to continue the program. I mean, eventually The Miz is going to get his win, but it's going to be in their final match, which may be at Super Showdown. It may be at the pay-per-view after that. But I think ultimately that's the thinking. So
it may be WrestleMania 63. Come on.
I mean, it could be. I mean, but to be honest with you, I mean, despite your in-person experience with this match, I actually have enjoyed their program more than I thought I would. I set the bar really low for this, and I enjoyed the WrestleMania match, regardless of what many people think, and I've enjoyed the program that in general that they've had so far, based on the limitations of a 50-some-year-old Shane McMahon, who is not a trained performer in any sense of the word, beyond just kind of a glorified stuntman. And I don't mean disrespect to Shane, but that's kind of what he is. I mean, he's like the son of the promoter who gets to play in the sandbox whenever he wants, but he doesn't go on the road. He doesn't compete in those house shows and the dark matches and every week. And so when you have the limitations of Shane McMahon, and you get a quality, somewhat of a serviceable match, regardless of the steel cage match, and I know that your opinions may differ, but I think that it was a serviceable, okay match, given the limitations of that and the storyline itself. So, but let's not end Money in the Bank conversation on a bad note. Give me something else that you really liked on this show, maybe that we didn't even talk about.
From Money in the Bank?
Yes.
Well, I touched on it a very, very little bit, but to me, the match of the night was Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles, and it was just incredible from beginning to end. And I'll tell you, judging by the energy, like, everybody's wearing whatever shirts they're wearing. I mean, I of course had the Beast Slayer shirt on, and you know, there was a lot of people wearing either AJ Styles apparel or Seth Rollins apparel. Of course, there's a mixture of every type of wrestler fandom throughout the audience, but everybody that was there was invested either one side or the other in this match. And it was like, it was the one that it seemed like people were most excited to see. Of course, the ladder matches are great, exciting. Whatever stunts can happen there are always a good time. But as far as just a one-on-one match, the one that people wanted to see was Seth Rollins, AJ Styles. And so they do the little mini promo up on the screen so that you know what's next on the card, because there's no way to know until right before it happens what's coming next when you're there. And the place just erupted. Like, people, if they had gone to go to the bathroom or get snacks, like, were turning around and coming back, you know? Everybody wanted to see this one. People were going crazy. And like I said, they were chanting, "This is awesome," from the beginning. It had a bunch of, what's the word, where they almost fall, like the ref gets to two and then they kick out or whatever, near fall. It had a bunch of those throughout, which it had to, of course. And throughout the match, nobody in the crowd had a clue who's going to win. Like, when we have Kofi Kevin Owens, I think you feel very, very sure they're not going to take Kofi's belt. Kofi's going to win this one. In this one, you had no idea who could win because they're very even. And even, like I said, with the fans there, it was very split down the middle, but it was different because the Seth Rollins fans don't hate AJ Styles. They still like AJ Styles. They just happen to be a bigger Seth Rollins fan, or versus vice, you know? So that match was just the incredible moment of the night. It had you on the edge of your seat, biting your nails, constantly like, oh, you know, throughout the entire thing. Everybody counting with the ref. Is this the time it's going to happen? Is this the time it's going to happen? Of course, when Seth is stomping and everybody's chanting, "Burn it down," you know, and right there at the end of the match, you see that he's about to do his stomp, and it's like, and that's it. And it was like the golden finish for that match. And that's really what I would have rather had in something like the cage match, like something brutal like that to just end it. And then it's perfect. And he gets the three count, the bell rings. Of course, Seth Rollins is my guy, so he's the one that I did want to win. But that was one of the other high points of the night. So, I mean, all in all, to put a bow on it, yeah, there's a couple of things that weren't perfect. There's a couple of things that really upset us. But if we take a step back and really look at it, all in all, it was a great night, a lot of great matches, and another spectacular event and a reason to keep watching.
Now, you mentioned it was your first event. So what was the in-person perspective like, or what did you experience, or what did you see that you may not have known and probably didn't know from sitting at home and watching the product? Was there things maybe the production-wise that really interested you, that, you know, maybe them changing out the ring apron or changing, you know, whatever? Or maybe it was, I don't know, certain promo videos or the production, anything that you want to take away from that you're like, oh, cool, I didn't know they did that?
Not so much. Well, the one thing that was, oh, cool, I didn't know they did that, was that the cage was hanging above the ring the entire night, hanging actually above the briefcases. And so to put the cage around the ring, they actually just lowered it down. And as they're doing it, they're flashing the lights and playing like this really intense music, which also was building us up for what I was disappointed by. But so that was really cool, because I did wonder, how are they going to do that? How are they going to throw a cage match in the middle of this and get the cage out there? And there it is, already built up above the ring, and they just lowered around it. The sound of the ring in person is insane. In fact, all the sounds, like the Usos in the pre-show, their super kicks, like everything just sounds so much more intense in person. The fans, it's just really great to be a part of it. Like, you can hear them, you can hear some of their chants when you're watching it on TV at home, but to actually be there, getting to chant along with them and just feel the energy, I have to say, it's better to experience it in person than at home. As far as what they do with the camera work, I don't know if you could tell this at home, but at one point a camera guy actually got taken out. I think it was during the men's ladder match that a camera guy actually got taken out. And I can't remember who did it, if it was Randy Orton, but yeah, I don't know if you ever got to see that at home, that a camera guy actually got taken out in the middle of one of the matches. But sorry, I'm getting a little off track. What I see at home is less than you see in person. Of course, you have the close-ups and you have to do that for dramatic effect, but when you're there in person, you can see things like Bailey coming into the ring and coming up the ladder. Whereas if you're watching it at home, you just have the close-up of the briefcase and those two up near it. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, on your screen is Bailey. But when you're in person, you actually see her ascend, and it's just way more intense. So I'd say it's better in person.
I can't argue with that. I mean, outside of the fact that you just have to deal with traffic and parking garages and all that afterwards, yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, the energy that you just mentioned it, that you feel from being in a live arena with 10 to 15 to 20,000 people with you is something that you can't duplicate sitting at home. And it's a contagious feeling. It's an addicting feeling. And anybody that ever gets a chance to go to a WWE live event needs to do so, even if it's your first time or you think it'll be too expensive or whatever. It's worth your time and money. I can promise you that. And I feel like I'm advocating or work for WWE. I don't. I feel like I'm not. I do not work for them. I have no affiliation with them. However, I've been to enough events to absolutely echo your opinion on that. So beyond Money in the Bank, what's something right now that you like that's going on with the current product that you are really looking forward to, or something that you're like, man, like this is going to be a great program?
Well, I do like a lot of the superstars. I'm invested in quite a few of them that are still around. Actually, if you don't mind, could I just ask you one thing?
Sure.
So this is, I do want to mention that I have nothing to do with WWE either, even if I sound like I'm advocating it or trying to be a commercial for them. But I hear a lot of people talking about that WWE needs to make up their mind. Are they making a TV show or a live show? Because they're trying to do both, and it's getting lost. Which is it supposed to be? So what are your thoughts on that? Do you feel like it's more one than the other?
So, I mean, based on the definition that people are trying to make me decide on, or your question decide on, is, oh, are they going to make a TV show? Meaning, is it going to be a very produced, very maybe higher on the comedy segments, feel more scripted, feel more structured, or is it going to have that more unpredictable feel of just, hey, we're going to let these wrestlers fight each other, and it's going to feel very live and raw, no pun intended? Is it going to feel very just whatever happens, very unpredictable live show? In other words, there's just a bunch of wrestlers that happen to have cameras there, and we're just going to let them do what they want. Or are they going to do a TV show? And to answer your question for a long answer, is going to be, I think that they are focused more on being a TV show, but they're now realizing the drawbacks of having a very structured TV show, in that it doesn't live up to the name of and what brought wrestling fans to the dance, and that is having a live, unpredictable, anything can happen feel to the show. And Raw doesn't feel like that anymore. SmackDown doesn't feel like that anymore. It's very structured, and at times, and look, I mean, I know we're trying to be positive here, but we're just calling a spade a spade. Raw, SmackDown, and their pay-per-views, for the most part, feel very predictable in their timing. You actually, like, I know when they're going to commercial break without them telling me they're about to go to commercial break.
True.
It's when a guy gets thrown out outside the ring and you hear Michael Cole say, and Raw rolls on. Like,
yeah.
You just know when they're going to commercial break. And the fact that they even have commercial breaks in the middle of matches is ridiculous. Because
it is.
What if the match ended in the commercial break? It never does. But if you were doing true competition, of course it would at some point. I mean, there are certain things that you know and it can feel when certain things are going to happen, and I don't like that all the time. Does everything have to be unpredictable all the time for everything? Absolutely not. But when it happens so much throughout a show, regardless of whether it's wrestling, whether it's Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad, I mean, you don't always want to know what's going to happen. You need that sense of unpredictability, and I think that's a huge element that is missing from WWE right now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So to go back to answering your question, what am I excited for going forward? I'm actually excited for Fox taking over, and I think that they're going to have a lot of input to how the shows are going to go. And the rumor that I've heard is that they're going to make it more sporty, more competitive, have the championships actually mean something. And so it could change for the better. I expect and believe that it will, actually being on a major network like that. But the thing that I'm very excited for as I'm tuning in every week is, of course, Firefly Funhouse. What is really going on there? I'm super excited, and I know a lot of people are already saying that they're going to screw it up, but I'm hopeful that they won't, because I've heard that Bray Wyatt is really, really running that thing on his own, and he obviously knows what he's doing, because right now it is one of the best things on. It's worth tuning in just for those 4 or 5 minutes every week.
You listen to my show, like I'm not changing my stance on this. I have said that since it happened, 4 weeks ago now, the very first Firefly Funhouse, and everyone went bonkers and said, oh my God, this is never going to work. And I said, let's give it time to breathe. Let's find out what this is about. And it's just such a stark contrast from what he was in the Eater of Worlds, and that persona that was getting very, very stale quickly. And we get it's just a crazy change, and he's in a sweater vest coming out to a kid's show, and we slowly learn that it's starting to get very dark, and there's a seed of darkness in Bray Wyatt that started to grow every single week, and we finally get the reveal that, okay, he's actually still this evil dude that has kind of a sweater vest to cover it up, and he can control this darkness. That's a cool element that I've spoken about before, but I love the fact that he's saying he can control it, meaning that it doesn't always have to be brought out. I like that. And yeah, if Bray Wyatt has his finger on this very closely and WWE allows him the creative authority to continue to do so, I think it'll translate well into the ring. I'm a bit concerned on them translating into the ring, but look, I'm typically not a big on the sports entertainment-y part. I like more of the competition, but you're right. This is a segment that I look forward to every single week, and every time I hear that music play, like I'm like, all right, I'm fully engaged. I can't wait to see what Bray Wyatt's going to do next with the puppets that he's got, or the kids that look like they're hypnotized, sitting with a blank stare in his production set or whatever he's doing. Like, I am fully into this, and I just hope that they have this a long-term vision for what this is about, and not just I think we'll debut you next week and you'll come out as that guy with a scary clown face and you'll play a heel. Like, I need them to have, well, what's this month's plan for me? What's next month? What's maybe even just a 3 to 6 month plan of where they want to go with this? And I think that's the concern that a lot of people have.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's a legit concern. But I feel like they really need to let Bray Wyatt have most of the control there. Like, he's actually a brilliant performer, and I'm not even talking about in the ring. I mean, just as an actor. Like, he's a great actor. So we could literally watch him lose his control, and he could pull that off and make it believable. Like, you could basically watch him descend into complete insanity and believe it if they let him do that. So I don't know. I'm trying to hope for the best, but right now it's really great, and I really hope that that it cashes in.
I do
no
too.
No pun intended on cashes in either.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm thinking about that too. But yeah, this is something that WWE can really, really find themselves in a great place with Bray Wyatt and getting the crowd behind him. It's going to be interesting. I think he'll be debuted as a heel because, I mean, he's brought kids into this who are just, you know, I mean, anytime you bring kids into a PG product, you need to be very, very, very careful what you do with them. And I think that WWE realizes that, but I would assume that he's going to be presented as a heel and then, or maybe just kind of neutral and see how the crowd reacts and gauge how they want to present him from there. Because I think in general, people are really starting to enjoy this Firefly Funhouse session every single week. I'm loving it, and we didn't get a big one this past week. It was just kind of another blip of him with that super scary clown mask, and just saying twinkle twinkle little star or let me in or whatever his thing is, and it's creepy. Like, I'm a 34 year old dude, and I'm still sitting there looking at it being like, yeah, like if that showed up in my house, I would lock my door and call the cops. Like, it's legitimately scary as far as the mask goes, and the unsettling feeling you get from him turning a child's lullaby into this just demonic type of presentation. It's extremely intriguing. I just want to make sure that it's translated correctly inside the ring, which is ultimately going to gauge the success or failure of his new persona.
Yeah, I know. I know. Which this actually just reminded me of something at the Money in the Bank during the men's ladder match. There were a bunch of brutal moments, especially Finn Balor. If you remember that, he was getting thrown all over the place. And the chant from the audience happened to be "Yowie, wowie" throughout. So, I mean, everybody is excited for this. And I don't know. There was part of me that was hoping he would show up that night. But now that it's over and a week has passed, I'm glad he didn't, because it needs to continue to build and it needs to be the perfect moment before he finally comes out live.
Definitely. And right. It doesn't need to be rushed. He doesn't need to be rushed to the roster. There's no reason to rush him up to the main roster and put him on TV just to put him on TV. He is finding a very good amount and more probably a higher level of success without even stepping foot in the ring yet by people being so engaged and just interested in this Firefly Funhouse. Whether you love it or hate it, you're still watching it, because even if you hate it, you're thinking, this is so bizarre. I hate this, but why am I watching it? And if you love it, you love it, and obviously you want more of it. So it's kind of a win-win, because it's so off the normal track for any type of vignette or any type of introduction for a repackaged superstar. And Bray Wyatt has really found something here that could ultimately skyrocket his career. And I hope they don't just put him in the mid card. I hope that they put him in a main event scenario, interrupt a main event. I don't know, something like that. It deserves main event status. Does it deserve him to be instantly champion? No, but he needs to be in there with an A guy, and they could take this a long, long way. So one more thing I wanted to talk about you with, and it's a bit of a downer, but it's something that was so impactful to your core as a person, not even as a wrestling fan. I mean, that's kind of secondary to what this was. And obviously I'm talking about the 20-year anniversary of Owen Hart's accident at Over the Edge, 1999. Him, obviously, I mean, I don't need to go through the whole thing. He debuted as was going to make an entrance as the Blue Blazer. His harness malfunction, he hits the rope, and, you know, all of that. And that was a moment, and I'll just give my quick thoughts, and I'll toss it to you, that at 1999, I was 14 years old when it happened, and I was only been watching wrestling for a couple of years, and I was watching Over the Edge, and I remember just hearing Jim Ross say, you know, there's been an accident, this is not part of the entertainment here tonight, Owen Hart fell, he was about to make a superhero-like entrance, blah, 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 and they were being extremely serious. This was the first time that I was introduced to a real scenario in an entertainment environment. So it was shocking as a 14-year-old, I don't want to say man, teenager. And it was, it brought everything back to earth. Like, oh my God, like something's really going on here. It was sad. It was hard to hear. It just was very humanizing. It took these guys and it humanized them. In a way that, at least in my perception of this whole product, when Stone Cold was the hottest ever, I mean, everything was just running on all cylinders. It was the height of the Attitude Era, and boom, you know, you have this incident happen with Owen Hart. It was shocking. It was sad. Even 20 years later, I mean, the tribute show they did to him, I mean, I'll watch that every once in a while on Raw the next night. All of it was hard. I mean, Eddie Guerrero was very hard too, but this was very difficult. So what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, everything like you said. Of course, you and I are the same age, so I was right around there, and it was definitely something I had never experienced before. And it was so surreal, because you're so used to seeing these guys do such brutal things and then be back for the next match. So to think that this really happened, like this isn't part of the show, somebody has really died because of an accident on what's basically supposed to be a stunt that they can pull off, like breathing, you know, it's supposed to be so simple to do, and that it killed him. And this is another way to talk about what it was like then to what it's like now. It's almost as if wrestling was super mainstream then, because I remember like shock going throughout my high school. Like everybody knew about it and it was devastating, tragic.
Yeah, I that's a good point. I remember it actually showing up on my local news that night, and they even played Jim Ross on my local news, giving the announcement that Owen Hart has died. It's one of those deals that, man, even though it's been 20 years, it still is like really hard and to think about, like, that actually happened, like where his harness malfunctioned, and to just think about like the live audience who saw it happen, or the announcer sitting at ringside, like to be there to see that. I mean, I'm sure at the time they were thinking, oh, this is just probably, you know, part of the show, because that's what you're just trained to believe.
Right.
This is something that just does not happen ever. And you're probably thinking, yeah, I would have thought the same thing, even if I saw, like, ooh, that looked really brutal. I'm sure, you know, that looked, is he okay? And you probably would have thought he's okay, but at the time where WWE, they clearly were not pointing the cameras at the ring for obvious reasons, but I think that people in the arena didn't know it was a serious deal, and the announcers didn't know it was a serious deal until you had the medical staff rushing into the ring. And it was, you know, Jim Ross, if anybody's out there, by the way, I'll plug his podcast with Conrad Thompson. They went into this in detail for over, I mean, their podcast was like 2.5 hours in total, but Jim Ross goes through this step by step in what he saw on the monitor, and Jerry the King Lawler rushing into the ring. And it's a very interesting listen. And you could tell that JR was getting a little bit choked up even describing it. And it's been 2 decades. So, I just can't imagine being there live. And from everybody I hear and talk to and listen to, this guy was beloved backstage by every single person, whether you're a referee, a caterer, a co-wrestler, management. They all loved Owen Hart.
Yeah, and you got to think about all those people that were there that night. Other wrestlers, the announcers, the referees, everybody else that was working that was part of the entertainment that night too. Like, how did it affect them? And I'll tell you, what it really does to me as a fan today is it almost makes me hold my breath when I see something like even just people falling off the ladders. Like, you just never know. Oh my God, is it going to happen again? Like, we see some incredibly brutal stuff, and now, like, I didn't have to do before then, but now, 20 years later, I'm still checking to make sure he's not dead, is he? You know, and that's crazy.
Yeah, it brings it back. I mean, you know, you're watching entertainment, but at the same time, like, you feel for these guys and gals who are just putting themselves on the line every single night. And one wrong move, an inch wrong this way or that way, the margin for error on some of these stunts and some of these flips and some of these maneuvers are next to zero in terms of you could be paralyzed if you do this, or you'll be fine if you do this. And the difference is just marginal. So to now bring it back to today's product, yeah, like, being in there in person, like, I love to be entertained, but at the same time, like, I watch some of these moves, and, you know, you're waiting for the referee to put up that X sign for some of the stunts and bumps that they take. And, you know, you may hate a heel, you may really dislike a certain performer, but when it comes down to it, and when an accident happens, all of that goes out the window, and you're just a human being at the end of the day. And yeah, like, it brings it back. Like, those things really humanize the whole product. And it's hard to watch. So I just wanted your quick thoughts on that. And let's end on a positive note. Let's go back to the Attitude Era. And you were one of those Attitude Era teenagers with me. What were some of your favorite memories with Stone Cold Steve Austin? I got to ask you what were some of your favorite memories? Because he was clearly the Attitude Era, the face of the Attitude Era. He's still my favorite wrestler of all time. I mean, that's not a very interesting selection, but it is. You know, when you look back, what were some of your favorite memories of Stone Cold, either with Vince McMahon, with The Rock, or what have you?
Oh, man. He could arguably be the greatest wrestler of all time. Some people say that he is. Of course, like I said, I was a major Hulk Hogan guy, but I just remember, see, this was the other weird thing. I was talking to you about this, before you started recording, that I didn't realize that wrestling wasn't just a normal thing throughout the world, because everybody was wearing the Austin 316 shirt to school. Like, everybody. He was just a loved character on WWE, and I can't pinpoint just one favorite moment of his.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me too. I mean, the thing is too, and I have such a regret with this. Like, he came that the top moment of the Attitude Era for Raw was rated the beer truck incident with The Rock and Vince McMahon and Shane.
Okay.
And I had the opportunity to go there, and it was the one Raw that I either couldn't or didn't want to go to. That was right down the street from where I used to live. I regret that so much that I wasn't able to go there, and that was the night that Stone Cold faced Paul White at the time, or Big Show as he would soon become. And it was – oh, man. That's the one regret I have. But there, as you said, it's hard to select one moment. Ending on a high note, I loved when he was able to stun Stephanie McMahon for the first time. People went crazy for that. Anything with Vince McMahon, with the Zamboni, with the beer trucks, all of that. It was just really good stuff.
Yeah, definitely the beer truck stuff. Now that you mention it, that's got to be the favorite.
Yeah, no, it is. And like, those are the moments I'll YouTube on, you know, whenever I'm like, all right, I just need to feel better about myself, or if I'm, you know, not feeling great, like I'll just YouTube like Stone Cold best moments or whatever. So I was there for the Raw 25 in the Barclays Center when he came out and stunned Shane and Vince McMahon last year. So that was the highlight of my year. Anything else that you want to discuss or bring up before we close things out?
Well, you just made me think of something. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm trying to raise a young fan now. He's just getting into it. He's only 10 years old, so he doesn't really know all of the history. So I've actually, when I've pulled up the clips, I've taken him way, way back. Or, of course, he knows who The Rock and John Cena are from the kids' movies that they now are in. So, you know, I show him that too, and he's like, oh wow, they were wrestlers, you know. And then I just show him some earlier clips of the current superstars, and it never even occurred to me that I need to start to show him Stone Cold Steve Austin, because I don't know if he's even aware of that name.
That's crazy to think about, but it's probably true. Like, if someone, yeah, I mean, it, but I guess if you've never seen it and you're 10 years old, I mean, there's no reason for you to have seen it, but it's crazy to think about. I don't know if that dates me or your son, but it's nuts to think about. But yeah, I mean, outside of the fact that he was a bit colorful and it was TV-14 back then, I mean, that's obviously up to you with the language and the beer, you know, the beer and the, you know, flipping everybody off and all that stuff. But yeah, it almost would be criminal to not educate someone on like Stone Cold Steve Austin or The Rock or Hogan or The Undertaker or Triple H. You almost kind of have to do that if you want to be a wrestling fan. It's almost like part of the law.
And now that I think of it, that's probably why he was a favorite of all the high school kids, because of that type of stuff. But this was another thing that you just reminded me of. They're saying that Fox wants to put it back to TV-14. This is a rumor. I heard it at Money in the Bank from a few fans there, so I don't know how true it is, and I don't know if I'll get in trouble for putting it out on the podcast, and people are going to start taking it as gospel truth. But have you heard that rumor?
I did not hear that rumor. But if it is, like, I mean, I'm totally on board for that. I mean, I just, the problem that I have believing that is that their sponsors, WWE sponsors that throw a lot of money at WWE to be able to, you know, advertise with them and have co-relationships and business relationships with, I don't think that they would be too happy about that. But hey, I'm on board for it. I just don't think it'll happen.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, David, it's been a blast. And before you go, let everyone know one more time where they can find you.
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram or Twitter, all one word, at Dave Allen Actor. And
awesome.
I believe it's not confirmed yet, but I believe that I will be at SummerSlam because it's right in Glens Falls, New York, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, man, that's pretty damn close to where I live. Probably, I don't know, maybe 40, 45 minutes away. So That's pretty cool. You'll have to give me a live experience with there as well. And it's always cool to hear from people who are in attendance rather than just everyone at home, because I'm reporting on something that I'm seeing on TV just like you are, and you don't get that in-person perspective of what's really going on during commercial breaks, the production, what are fans saying, you know. So that's a really cool deal. You'll have to share your experience here. So Dave, it's been a blast, and we'll definitely have to do this again.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, thanks a lot for having me.
No problem. Take care.
Bye.
All right, bye.